Today, for the first time in this trial, the jury got some, maybe just a little insight into what Jahar Zanayev thought of his bombing victims. No one deserves to suffer like they did. That's what Jahar Zanayev said about the victims to Sister Helen Prejean, a prophetic voice against the death penalty. Last week, when her name surfaced in this case, no one knew she had ever met Zanayev. Today, she revealed she's met him 5 times in detention, and she took the stand to testify as a character witness for the defense, speaking about her counseling of the defendant. It's day 30. The defense and prosecution have rested, and this is Finish Line inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, I'm David Boeri for WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
What a weekend the judge, George O'Toole, must have had, Kevin. Mm. Not known as a bold judge. He's rather risk-averse, if that's the reputation. He must have gone through a lot of agita because this morning, and only this morning, he made the decision. And it was dramatic when we heard those words, the defense calls Sister Helen Prejean.
Yeah, it was. In hindsight, I think there are far more hours spent on the legal wrangling over her appearance than her actual appearance itself. She was only up there a handful of minutes.
17 minutes. Dramatic and electric minutes.
It's funny, you call it dramatic. I saw it as more ironic. This idealistic Catholic nun sitting there trying to save the life of a self-admitted jihadist. And I think she tried, I don't know if she did it, but she tried to answer the question that I think we've all had sitting through this trial, watching him, looking for some clue that what he has been convicted of doing bothered him.
We don't know how many of these jurors know that the person that was speaking to them was once played by Susan Sarandon, or that there's a movie, Dead Man Walking, that is the story of her life. Watching this, I was struck by a line from her book, from the movie, which is, it is easier to kill a monster than a human being.
Right.
And the effect here, the very heart of mitigation, is to establish that there's a person. And in this case, the question was, had he recognized the enormity of what he had done? And was there any emotion? Because we haven't seen that from the defendant in the courtroom.
Yeah, I thought that Sister Helen went out of her way under the questioning of Miriam Conrad, one of Zarnayev's lawyers, to make it clear that her ministry with men on death row is not just confined to the killers. She says her ministry applies to the victims of murder.
It's something that draws you to Sister Prejean, her honesty. She recognized early on that she had made a mistake with her very first death row inmate because she hadn't reached out to the family.
Victim. Yeah. I think she was trying to establish herself, and clearly the defense wanted to establish her as somebody who's not just this, you know, knee-jerk liberal, oh, I care just about the perpetrators of violence, blah, blah, blah. She wanted to present herself as somebody who cared about both sides of the issue. It's not just the murderer, it's his victims. And that's how she positioned herself, to be there sort of as counselor, sitting there talking to him. As she explained, when she goes to talk to prisoners, she's not there to convert them. And Miriam Conrad said, well, why did you meet with Jahar Zanayev? And she said, the same reason I meet with people who have done terrible crimes, simply to be by their side, let them know they have a dignity.
And she talked about accompanying them to help them come to grips and take responsibility. I thought it was interesting to step back from this. On cross-examination, William Weinreb, the prosecutor, introduced himself. And she says, glad to meet you.
Yeah.
And Weinreb replies, you too. A very mild-mannered man. And there was no question he was being totally insincere. They did not want her anywhere near this courthouse.
No, the backstory of this is the prosecution is upset that she was even in there with the defense team meeting with him. It seems, from my information, she met with him both at Fort Devens, where he's held, and also in this courthouse itself. It was pretty obvious seeing some of the prosecution side of this. They were not happy about this. They fought tooth and nail to exclude her testimony completely. One thing they did succeed, and you could see it, David, in the to and fro, they got the judge to limit the scope of her testimony.
I've never heard a defense attorney so strict with her own witness. We better stop there, or I'm going to stop you right there. She was on a tight leash, Miriam.
There was
Conrad
actually one point when Sister Helen said, do you want to hear me talk about this? And then she answered her own question, goes, oh, I know I'm not supposed to talk about this. So she even knew how much the scope had been limited and what she could testify.
And of course,
to.
This goes back to the heart of the dilemma for the judge, which is we have, and you've mentioned that unsettling nature, the bizarre phrase, a death-qualified jury, which means that every one of those jurors has said that he or she is not morally opposed to imposing the death penalty if they're convinced by the evidence. So there's no way that she's going to be allowed to come in. On the other hand, the most common reason for death penalties to be reversed is that the judge does not allow sufficient right. mitigating evidence. So he is stuck. And so we talked about it last week, name, rank, serial number, and they did get a little bit more in. But when she said, well, in the Catholic Church, we've become opposed to the death penalty, objection for Weinreb. And then what really frosted him was when Miriam Conrad asked on redirect, do you think Tsarnaev is repentant? And that was the loudest objection right. of all, yeah. and that was sustained.
I'd say the critical thing that Sister Helen did get in, she was talking about how they were talking about having theological discussions, actually, about Catholicism and Islam. And at some point, Sister Helen said that Tsarnaev expressed some feelings about his victims. And her quote was, he said emphatically, no one deserves to suffer like they did. And Miriam Conrad asked, how sincere did he come across? As absolutely sincere, Sister Helen said. His response was so spontaneous. I had every reason to believe it was sincere. His face registered it, and he kind of lowered his eyes. His voice, it had pain in it, actually.
I had every reason to think he was genuinely sorry for what he did.
Yep. And those are Sister Helen's perceptions, not Tsarnaev's own words. Because it seemed to me that the natural follow-up question would have been, you know, if he regrets the pain that was caused by this, does he regret taking part in the bombing itself? But that question never came, and the jury's left to wonder, is expressing remorse for causing pain the same as expressing remorse for bombing the Boston Marathon in the first place?
I am told the defense was not allowed to ask that question.
True.
And by the way, there's a hint here when Sister Helen Prejean talks about they had conversations. I told him I was dedicating my life to God, and trying to do the will of God is the goal of your life as a Muslim. She said they had genuine arguments. They had general debate. And I wondered, are they talking about, was he making an argument as to why he did it? Was he talking about politics here? You know, this takes me back to the movie where the death row inmate she's talking to happens in the movie to be a racist. Mm-hmm. And he's arguing all the way up to the end his point of view. So I wondered, is this about politics? She is, by what she does, accompanying them. She listens. She hears. She tries to extract responsibility. That's what she does. And in a very Catholic city, she is a nun who comes across not as the hard-edged radical, but as a normal person. She even comes through with that Cajun dialect.
And I think Bill Weinreb, the prosecutor, tried to throw that and use that against her. He basically suggested, hey, you know, this is what you do for a living. Your ministry is funded by your fame, basically, and that there are no conditions. There's no crime that you believe anyone should get the death penalty
for. She agreed.
And she agreed with that.
Absolutely. She was up front, and he minimized the damage, showed real professionalism. He spent 2 minutes doing a cross-examination and was done. But he established, you're a leading opponent. Yes. So you take it there. I see the jurors smiling at her. They yeah. laughed at one point. I thought it was a dramatic 17 minutes.
It was.
Especially since we were wondering what would happen. But the defense certainly got something out of this. They don't have a lot to work with.
They don't. It's one of those things we won't be able to judge the impact of Sister Helen's testimony until the jury speaks. And if, obviously, if the jury sentenced him to death, we'll know that her testimony really wasn't that big of a deal. It wasn't that relevant. But if only one person, and that's all you need in this case, only one person opposes the death penalty, you'd have to presume that Sister Helen was an effective witness.
Let's turn the subject to the government rebuttal and this discussion once again of ADX, that's Supermax, the most secure federal prison in the country, the one that's reserved for terrorists. You talked last week about you thinking it was obviously very important to both sides. I felt like I was watching World War I trench warfare today, where both sides are spending inordinate amounts of time to gain a few yards. They retreat, they advance, but both sides seem to think that what happens, whether ADX is rock solid, whether it's a hole from which he can't emerge or not, is critical to the outcome of this trial.
David, there's no doubt that if we separate this trial over all these weeks and months, there's no one single issue that had more time spent on it on the witness stand than the actual kind of punishment that Zahar Tsarnaev will face if he is sentenced to life. I think that's a perfect metaphor. It was sort of like World War I trench warfare, because the amount of time spent on it and the amount of ground gained seem ridiculous. And we got the point from the very first that there are no guarantees.
No guarantees.
There are no guarantees to any of this on either side. There is no certainty that he will remain in the most restrictive unit in the most restrictive prison in the United States.
Right.
That said, there is no certainty if he is sentenced to death, he will ever be put to death, because it so rarely happens in the United States. To be honest, you mentioned Judge O'Toole not wanting to create a situation for possible reversal. I think he just sat back and let them have until they were tired. It was like a prize fight. They were tired of throwing punches.
It was stunning. We talked once again. How many times does it snow in Florence, Colorado? The government is clear. They will not let this go. They're so outraged that the defense used that photo suggesting it was Siberia when it only snows
a few days a year.
We got into big discussion of whether or not he could write a book, and whether who would see the book and whether he could do it or not. It goes back and forth on the most trivial of details, whether the jurors can be assured that he's going to go into a hole that's a cleaner version of hell and not emerge. You can't guarantee it. I thought at one point the defense brought out the idea that, look, the Department of Justice, the Joint Terrorist Task Force, the U.S. Attorney, the FBI would all have to decide that a modification should be made that will take him out of there.
It really just comes down to the fact that can we punish him enough without killing him? That's what this has all been about. And the defense, I think, feels confident they have made the case to somebody who's willing to hear it that he's not going to have a good life in prison. It's going to be incredibly restrictive. I think the prosecution also established we don't know what that's going to be like in 20 or 30 years. We just don't know. But if somebody is inclined not to kill this guy and wants to be assured he's going to have a very lousy life in prison, I think it was established that ADX doesn't sound like to me a place where I would want to go and spend the rest of my natural life.
This truly is a trial that is in a class of its own, nothing like it that I've ever seen. This is the end of day 30. Judge O'Toole is giving the jury, the attorneys, tomorrow off, so we'll be back on Wednesday for closing statements. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse, this is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. For WBUR, I'm David Boyer.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at BostonGlobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.